Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome to the show. Today, we're listening to a panel I moderated recently at the Federal Mobile Computing Summit in Washington. The panel focused on using mobile computing to enhance mission. The panelists are Patrick McFall, the acting CIO for the Division of Information Technology of the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service at the Department of Agriculture, Rob Palmer, the acting deputy executive director for Enterprise Systems Development Office at the Homeland Security Department, and Shanna Simmons, the GEOINT Integration Capabilities Officer for the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. I start off the panel by giving some context to our discussion today.
Obviously, mobile. We're familiar with the growth, the use, the acceptance, smartphones, tablets, what have you. A couple things about the federal government that I found interesting. This comes from the research company IDC, who did a report in 2014. And they found that smartphones, tablets, e-readers make up just 5% of the government IT market. IDC says this gives them, these technologies, a substantial growth potential, most of it coming from tablets that agencies will buy. And in fact, IDC predicts the use of tablets will grow by double-digit rates over the next 3 years. At the same time, feds are going to use less voice services, more data services, not surprising given the move to texting, the move to cell phones, smartphones and the like. And in fact, they say that they predict the wireless voice market will decline by 6.9%. That's compound annual growth rate, if you're, for those of you keeping score. And wireless data services should grow by 10.2% over the same period. Now, it's not just federal employees or contractors using these devices, but agencies getting citizens to come to them for services through mobile devices. Let me give you one example. The Government Accountability Office reported in December that the growth of citizens using smartphones or tablets to access federal services has been growing by leaps and bounds. One example is the Department of Interior, which reported that the number of individuals using smartphones or tablets to access their information and services increased from 57,000 visitors in 2011 to 1.2 million in 2013. So despite this excitement, we know that agency CIOs and others have concerns. There's security concerns. One of the things that comes up in surveys time and again that we see is the security of devices, the security of the data. We also, how do you implement apps and devices and bring your own device? And all those things are still out there, as you heard Rob talk about, how do you make sure that the apps you're using are secure? Let's turn to Patrick McFall. He is the acting CIO over at the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service at Agriculture. Patrick.
Good morning, everybody. I guess Jason said I needed to tell you something you didn't know. I guess I haven't been in government service long, only about 8 or 9 years. And as acting CIO, I get a chance to make changes I wanted to make that the CIO wouldn't do when he was the real CIO. So it's a good point to do that. Currently, for about the last 11 months, the veterinary services has been in the middle of an outbreak that we've been dealing with. It had to do with a high-path avian influenza that's been going out throughout the United States. We've been eradicating sort of chickens and turkeys out there. So the thing that you don't know is buy your turkey for Thanksgiving today because prices are going up. And enjoy that one. I've had a really good opportunity being with veterinary services. Veterinarians are not the quickest people to embrace technology. But we've been slowly but surely trying to force it on them. I had an opportunity a couple years ago to put together a digital signature process using Salinas eLife, which allowed us to go ahead and increment our paperwork so it could be digitally signed in the field by our veterinarians. Some of the things that we've been dealing with during this outbreak is the ability to get out and get the information that we needed to be able to identify where the outbreak is, identify what the disease was, identify how many animals we had out there. And one of the biggest problems that we had with that was the fact that we weren't mobily ready. We had incident command centers that were set up where we could do a lot of the work there, but our field people that were going out were doing a lot of things either pen and paper, or they were taking tablets out and they were putting everything down in there, then having to come back to the incident command center to put everything back together so that we could collect the data that we needed to move forward. The first mobile app that we had an opportunity to create was on a Microsoft CRM platform that we were able to get out to them, and we found out that we're going to need a lot more than what we have right now. Obviously, a lot of you realize that with the OPM breach that occurred last year, security is a big thing, so trying to get our mobile apps past security is one of our biggest problems, but we're continuing to work forward on that, and we're hoping it's going to help us basically track the animals, trace the animals, and protect your food supply so that when you do end up buying the cheaper chickens and turkeys later, that you know it's safe as well.
When you talk about using digital signatures, can you just talk a little bit more about what that means? Because a lot of people hear digital signatures, they hear PKI, that's what they want to hear at least. How did you guys implement that briefly?
Basically what we did, I had a phone call from my deputy administrator in August of 2013. Him and my CIO at the time and the associate administrator for AFIS had called me up on the phone and said, we want to implement digital signature. We want to be able to sign our forms. Currently, Veterinary Services does trace back and tracking of animals that come into, go out of, and move around this country. We have about 60,000 veterinarians nationwide that are currently signing the forms in a wet signature format. So my deputy administrator basically said, I want them to be able to sign that digitally. I want them to be able to do it in a safe manner. So we ended up implementing eSign Live using our PIV cards so that when we can get the dual authentication out there, we've got the PIV card itself. We've got the code that you've got to put in for that as well. We ended up doing it in a platform. It's our VSPS platform. It's designed for both import and the movement of animals around the country. And we also did it with our veterinary export health certificate platform as well. We partnered up with Solanus, they were a great company to partner with. They brought everything to the table with us. I had one of the tougher jobs, and I not only was working with a contractor in Solanus, I was working with two other contractors that were developing on two different applications and tried to get it together. The plan was to implement this starting October 1st of 2013 and have it into production by August of 2014. So we kind of let my boss know that I needed to scale it down just a little bit. So we went with both import and export forms. We basically, because we couldn't at the time use a non-FedRAMP certified cloud, we ended up using an on-premise application with Solanus to go ahead and do that. And we're currently getting ready to move to cloud. But we did it in such a way that we're at least able now at our ports and our veterinarian offices around the country to be able to get those signed, get them digitally signed, have the audit trails that we need to go back from and do that. The big problem we have now for second phase is that a lot of the places that we have ports where animals are coming into the country have little to no connectivity whatsoever. So we need to be able to implement Solanus' next version of this where we can work offline, be able to do that work, bring it back, and still be able to track the audit trail on those signatures.
All right, very cool. Maybe we can get more into it as we get into audience questions. All right, Shanna?
I work for the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, or NGA. We're here really representing the GeoInt App Store. NGA runs the GeoInt App Store and is the house for all apps that have to do with geospatial intelligence. Anything that has a geospatial flavor, we want to be the one-stop shop for those applications. So for those folks out there that have apps and they don't have a place to host them, or they're already hosting them in one place and they want to increase their market space and host it in another place with a known market of NGA customers, we'd be happy to host those and we can educate you on our governance process, our security standards to host it in that environment. We came out with a new store, an updated store, this past December. We increased our intelligence behind the store so we can better understand what our customers are using and help to anticipate their needs in the future. Also, looking into what type of devices most customers use and then doing research in what people are investing in the future. A big reason why we're here today as well of what is everyone else using, what's the trend so we can be smart and anticipate our customers' needs and help them with that. We're also here to learn about data. And this is really important because of a very innovative program that we started at NGA. It's never been done in the government. It's a new business model in which we're moving to a commercial-like business model. The program's called IGAP, Innovative GeoInt Application Provider Program. And what this program is it's a trusted broker that NGA has put in place. TASC, or Ingility, is the company that runs that program. They are our trusted broker for NGA. And they provide three main services for us as an agency. The first one is marketing. So they market what NGA's customer set looks like, what data we have available out to the public, so that we can get application developers' interest to develop applications for our GeoInt App Store. So they're out there marketing to academia, small business, large corporations, and they're forging a relationship with those groups for those vendors to build applications for the government. So we did one contract cycle. So the second thing that they do is they provide the contract mechanism for payment for these applications. Some of you may be aware of the traditional contracting method of an 18 to 22 month cycle where you come up with an idea for a requirement, you formulate that requirement, you send out some RFIs, you send out some RFPs. 18, 22 months, you finally get a contract in place that can develop what you've been needing. It's now 2 years later. And then you develop for a year or however long it takes. before you're able to instrument and get the customer what they need. So we did that one time with iGap. Now iGap works with those vendors directly. They hold an agreement with all the vendors and developers through this program. They make sure that they meet our governance standards. So that's the third piece. They have an unclassified open technical environment, which mimics our Geomint App Store. And they provide data out to these developers. And they really help people who aren't used to working with the government or haven't had the opportunity to work with the government before work closely with us to meet our customers' needs. So we're moving that 18-month traditional acquisition cycle to the goal of 90 days. So we have a customer's idea, let's say today. One of you comes to me and says, I have a perfect idea. I have a group of folks that have been needing this type of application. It has a geospatial flavor, meaning I need a point on the map on where I'm going to be able to track whatever type of information you guys are interested in. From that point in validating that idea and that we do have a customer set behind that, to finding the developers, to having it in, to meeting all of our security and governance, we're hoping we can do that within 90 days. So improving that cycle. So we're here to talk to you about the App Store, provide information to you, and then also the iGap program. And if you're a vendor or a developer, how you can get connected to that program. And then also, as a customer of NGA, I know some of you are, what kind of ideas or what kind of data could we host out to developers as well for that program to be successful?
Talk a little bit about when you talk about a trusted broker. So the contract with Angility Task mm-hmm. is for them to do these things as you went through. But when a lot of people hear broker, they think insurance broker, they hear cloud broker's been thrown around. They're almost the mobile app broker for you guys to kind of play that middleman. Hey, I have an idea. Will this work for, you know, NGA? Talk to these people. I'm simplifying it, but.
Absolutely. So they're taking the government speak and making it understandable to industry. And they're making the data that is sometimes hard stuck in our stovepipes. We talk about data today, I'm sure. And how can we get that data more available? Our director, Director Cardillo, really is pushing us to be more transparent and more inclusive of industry. And this is just one way in which we're doing that. The one part I didn't hit on, and I'm glad that you mentioned it, the breaker part is understanding what NGA is looking for. And there's always a continuous dialogue between us and the iGap broker. But the payment of these applications is by the download. That's where the commercial model comes into play. We're no longer paying for the upfront development costs and the back-end sustainment. We're building efficiencies. We're building innovation. So people are out there not just building an app to meet a requirement. They're building great apps because they know they won't get paid unless they download. So we're really pushing to get good applications to better service our customer.
So in this unclassified setting, see how I get that right out there for you? What's your favorite app?
Our number one app in our store is the aeronautical application, where pilots across the U.S. are using that application to see their data within an iPad instead of the 80 or 90 pounds worth of hard copy maps that they would have to carry onto flights. Where they're actually able to visualize that and plan their routes on a device instead.
We have to take a break. Today we're listening to a panel I moderated recently at the Federal Mobile Computing Summit in Washington. The panel focused on using mobile computing to enhance mission. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. Today we're listening to a panel I moderated recently at the Federal Mobile Computing Summit in Washington. The panelists are Patrick McFall, the acting CIO for the Division of Information Technology of the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service at the Agriculture Department, Shanna Simmons, a Geoint Integration Capabilities Officer for the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, and Rob Palmer, the Acting Deputy Executive Director for the Enterprise Systems Development Office at the Homeland Security Department. In this section of the show, we hear from Palmer and his work with the CIO Council's Mobile Tiger team.
You talked about the move to NIAP, the acceptance of NIAP. Now you're operationalizing it. The question that came to me is, what does that mean, and what should we expect to see 3 months from now, 6 months from now? Is it more guidance? Is it more frameworks? What is it?
That's a good question, and that's kind of what the discussion that we're having right now is, what does operationalizing that mean? In essence, it's like any other criteria that you have. You're always left with, okay, how do I use that? Where do I go from here? How does that integrate into my daily processes? So the daily processes in this environment is, you have developers that are working on applications constantly. And you can either have those developers have the benefit of knowing what that criteria is and incorporating that into their practices, or you bolt it on at the end and you get some rework that you have to do. So what we're really thinking about in terms of operationalizing that is getting that underneath at that foundational kind of development layer, where the tools that the developers are using are being used in a manner that adheres with that criteria. There's always going to be some things that you're going to have to wait till a build to test and things of that nature. But if the developers understand enough about the criteria and the security aspects that need to be met by these mobile apps that are being used on the devices, they continually get smarter in their development practices. The tools get smarter and more aware of the security measures that need to be put in place, and everybody benefits from that. So operationalizing that is baking it into the processes and procedures that are going to be used to develop and deploy these apps.
Offers a little more. Everyone has a little bit different story. So what kind of questions do we have from the audience? Anyone yet? Pat, let me start with you. You talked about the signature stuff, but we said one of the big challenges you had was the security piece. And that's something we hear quite often. How are you guys addressing the security piece? I mean, the two-factor authentication, obviously, is one way.
Well, the two-factor is one way. I mean, we're really starting to look at it. The whole OPM breach has really put us in a quandary in dealing with a lot of the different entities that we have using our applications and our mobile apps throughout the country. Like I said, we have private sector veterinarians that are out there. Obviously, they don't carry their own PIV card, so we're trying to work through trying to get a card that they can actually get their hands on. Well, with Solanus, that's it's a really good example. We have a contractor that's from another country that, in the government standpoint, when you're doing all the paperwork to try and get your authentication approved and get your BIN, you need to put a Social Security number down, and Canadians don't have Social Security numbers. So it really has put us in a quandary. So we're working with our security personnel, we're working with the department, we're working with OPM to try and make the process a little bit easier than what it is. They're working on different types of cards that we can pass out that'll give them the opportunity. We're looking at soft tokens to be able to get them into use of security that way as well.
Rob, let me turn to you. Pat brought up the OPM breach, which is something that, you know, I think we're probably all a little tired of talking about. When it comes to security, and there's never-ending discussion around security, where does that fit in? Because there's been changes around, for instance, HSPD 12, the NIST publication talked about derived credentials. Are you working that into the processes when you talk about operationalizing?
Yeah, certainly. There's two angles I take on that. One is it's really just accelerating. It's been around. We just, for one reason or another, didn't implement it as quickly as maybe we should have. And there were lots of valid reasons for that. But nevertheless, it's really the increased scrutiny and the current climate is just accelerating what we know is a good practice and what we know needs to be the case. The derived credentials discussion is obviously more difficult. We've got some integration concerns there that we have to get through. And it's, I guess, maybe less concerns and just we have to get the technology there. There are end-to-end solutions that are emerging in the market, but only if you're starting from, you know, a vanilla install, right? If you've got existing infrastructure, it's harder to integrate the current solutions that are out there with your existing infrastructure. So we're in this situation where we know that derived credentials from a user experience perspective is the answer, right? We need to be able to do that because we have to present safe and reliable certs to these applications, the phones, et cetera. How are we going to get there is the question, and how quickly?
I was going to say, I mean, that's one of the biggest things that we're looking at out there as well, is that unfortunately we don't know what we don't know until we've implemented something. And a lot of times when we start implementing the solutions out there, we uncover another factor that's in there that's a problem. But like Rob said, I mean, the biggest part about it is being able to get the security so that we can connect to the phones to use the applications that are out there. And until we can do that, we're kind of in a standstill.
Yeah, I'll add one thing on that, and it's something that I push at DHS a good bit, is, you know, we have an opportunity since we're moving to this, and we know that applications and identities are going to be at the center of this, kind of as part of that re-envisioning. What we don't talk about a lot is building applications that properly use those credentials and move those around. What I would like us to avoid as a federal entity is having to go back and rework all of our applications to then take advantage of the new technologies. Some of that can be done. Some of it can't until we actually figure out what the target is. But nevertheless, I would love us to keep an eye towards how we're building these applications to take advantage of the capabilities in the environment.
All right, we got a question back here.
My name is Peng Ngo. I work for the Department of Homeland Security Office of Emergency Communication. We are viewing an Android app right now. And is there a process or written documents that how we go about to put the application on the hand of the government employees? I'm looking for a detailed document process. What would we need to do to get that app going?
All right. So at the end of this, I'll hook you up with Doug Hansen over there, and we'll get you. We have a process. There are now for you in OEC. It's as close to what you need. We've got a playbook and a process by which you get an application out.
Now, are you referring to the car wash? Because, you know, it's one of my favorite topics.
But yes, that is what I'm referring to.
Another question.
My name is Mikhail Schlossman. I'm with FEMA in the Recovery Technology Programs Division. One of the things that we have in our use cases is the need to be able to communicate with state and local partners as well as individuals, which causes all kinds of security concerns. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we have is in that need to be able to have those customers be able to provide us information, sometimes very specific information using business rules. So we have applications or an application in some cases that does that work. What I was curious about in the case of the international work that you're talking about for food inspections is you also talked about these use cases dealing with remote customers. And when you're doing that, are you using forms that are kind of live forms? Are you using standard forms that are data input that are just signed? Is it kind of like a paper process copied? Is there business intelligence behind it? If there is business intelligence, how did you work that?
I'm assuming this is for me. So... yeah, I mean, we have the same problem. We have state partners, we have private partners, everything else that are out there. The forms that we set up were standard forms that we put into an application format. So it's basically the application is designed to where they just fill it out and the form gets printed out. As we're working with Solanus, it basically turns it, when it transfers the data over to Solanus, it turns it into a sort of PDF flat file. And it's that PDF flat file that we're ending up signing and kind of going from there so that the end result is a form that you're used to seeing, but it's all more on the back end of it to where we're using a workflow processor to go ahead and push it through.
We have to take a break. You're listening to a panel I moderated recently at the Federal Mobile Computing Summit in Washington. The panel focused on using mobile computing to enhance mission. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. Today, we're listening to a panel I moderated recently at the Federal Mobile Computing Summit in Washington. The panelists are Patrick McFaul, the acting CIO for the Division of IT of the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service at the Agriculture Department. Shanna Simmons, the GEOINT Integration Capabilities Officer at the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, and Rob Palmer, the Acting Deputy Executive Director for the Enterprise Systems Development Office at the Homeland Security Department. In this section of the show, we hear Simmons talk about the app broker concept NGA is using.
I think working in the federal space and working with the government, there's always levels of policy and bureaucracy that we learn to work through.
Get out of here.
So I wouldn't say it's been kicked off without a hitch. There are some things that we're working through, basic little things. I wouldn't say that there's major hiccups that we've hit thus far. We do have about 6 apps that are in the process within that technical environment that they're going through testing, that they're doing some developing. They're going through the cost negotiations because that's one job of IGAP is to negotiate that download rate per app, what that cost estimate would look like. So there's a lot of that negotiations going on. A lot of lessons learned from that, too. A lot of these developers have been developing for the commercial space, and we all know that the customer set in the federal government or the intelligence community or the Department of Defense is a completely different ballgame. And understanding what the price per download or the effective rate of what that should look like, we're kind of working through that as well. And a lot of people ask that question, is this a 99-cent app? Or is my organization going to have to pay for this? And it's not. It's an NGA program. It's paid for by NGA. And that download rate won't be visible on our GEOINT app store. You won't know if it's an IGAP app or if it's an app that we've hosted from another government agency, like I mentioned before. I'm just trying to be really transparent with the customer and make ease of use for them. So I would say there has been a few hiccups on how they market and are they marketing on their behalf or NGAs. But all in all, we've been up and running for 6 short months. And we have 6 apps that are in the process currently.
And then you have a bunch that are in the available for download as well, or are those six one and the same?
So you mentioned the IGAP program. So we have six apps within the IGAP program that are in the process to be accepted. Within the GUN App Store itself, we have numerous other apps. You can go to apps.nga.mil and take a look at what apps that we have there.
All right, here's a question.
What decision-making process did you go through in order to make that determination that this is the best way for you to go to outsource it to a broker versus what was the consideration?
So traditionally, we've been doing the lengthy traditional contracting method, or setting up a large contract and having developers on hand. So we started looking at being more transparent, be more public facing as part of the intelligence community, trying to get it out there in the public to better service the public and for them to better understand what we do for the community at large. So looking at cost savings as well in the economic situations that we're in, we really think that this IGAP program can force efficiencies. More innovative apps because you're opening up to a broader market space or broader vendor community. And we wanted to lower the barriers of entry for those companies or academia, grad students can participate in this program. So that was all part of the decision process. And I would say being so different and new, it took a number of years. It started as one idea and it really morphed over those 2 years as you get, of course, legal involved and contracts involved and how you actually make this program come to be. So that was part of it, driving efficiencies, making it, bringing things into the government faster, and trying to do it cheaper in the economy that we're working.
All right, another question.
Hi, good morning. Steve Cooper, CIO, Department of Commerce. Hey, I'm curious as to the following. As all of us bring mobile applications and mobility into our respective environments, are you guys building these off of your legacy infrastructure environment, or are, in fact, you reframing your infrastructure in a different way? Follow the question? It's for all of you.
Yeah. Who wants it?
We're starting with some of our legacy systems to start out with. Basically, it's the best way to go. We've got a mobile information management system out there right now that's used for animal traceback and everything else like that, what we've got from there. And we're looking at building that into an application model that can go out onto an iPhone. Right now, we're limited to iOS because our agency will not authorize us to put droids out there. We're hoping to change that with a couple of pilot programs that we're putting in right now. But currently, we're dealing with legacy. More so, the reason why is because the government itself is moving into the commercial off-the-shelf products. So as we start to move that way, we're trying to look for more and more products that have their own mobile apps that are with it. But the legacies are the ones we've got to take care of right now.
Steve, let me put a finer point on your question. I think he's also asking about the infrastructure itself, because a lot of times what happens is, as you all know better than I, the application, do you just shift and lift to mobile? And then does it still live on the old legacy system, the mainframe, whatever you're using? Is that what you were trying to get at?
Yeah, no, we're doing modifications to the legacy itself to make sure that it works consistently with the mobile aspect of it as well.
Yeah, there's a little bit of, I mean, it. I guess in this evolution, it's going to be both, right? So there's going to be, and what we have tried to focus on in DHS is the business needs that drive that, right? So there are legacy apps that there's a significant business need to have a new way to access that. And in that instance, you have to look at, is it better to rebuild or to tack something onto that? Wherever we can, we try to anticipate what, you know, where they're going. As far as brand new infrastructures, not yet. I mean, there's a lot tied into the existing infrastructures, and it's hard to move that aircraft carrier.
And I would say for the GUN App Store, a lot of the apps that we host stay within the parent organization in which built those applications. From the store itself, we're really looking into moving our store into the cloud. And on the data side is how data services can better be handled within the cloud itself as well. So our R&D department, our Innovision office within NGA is taking a look at that, of how we can drive some efficiencies as data services in the store itself.
Mm-hmm. All right, another question.
This is actually to add on to that. My name is Josh Dixon from Samsung. I wanted to ask about mobility backend as a service, if you thought about leveraging that so that you could provide APIs so that the content that you guys have within your organizations, industry can come in and provide the front-end applications for it, leveraging your backend, so you don't have to recreate the wheel every time a new application is built and brought into your infrastructure.
Yeah, we absolutely are looking. I mean, not specifically at any specific technologies, but that concept, absolutely. And it's just part of the re-envisioning process. How do we do this more efficiently and better? APIs and in this space and its volume are relatively provide an opportunity for us to rethink kind of how we code and how we gain access to the data. And you know, we take it even further back, and when in re-envisioning this, is the data is itself, and everything else is just an access mechanism to that data. And when you take that kind of base level look at it, all kinds of things start to present themselves as potential options in how you access that data.
And we currently have API documentation within our GeoN App Store, and that's one of the services we provide for developers. Who host their applications on the store. We provide them those APIs so they understand what kind of business intelligence they're getting. So there's functionality within the store. So much like a commercial Apple or Google Play, you can provide open text feedback. You can provide star ratings. You can give feedback on this app is great, but I wish it did XYZ. We provide that information back out to the developers. And the way that we're providing data today, and that's what we're really in the business of, we're not in the business anymore. And to go back to your question, too, of building these applications. Industry does that better than government. We are the data providers, so how can we make our data the best, and how can we make it disseminated in the best way? And that's exactly what we're talking about. How do we standardize services? How do we make sure we're interoperable? How can we plug and play so it's easier for developers to use the data?
We have to take a break. Today, we're listening to a panel I moderated recently at the Federal Mobile Computing Summit in Washington. The panel focused on using mobile computing to enhance mission. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. Today, we're listening to a panel I moderated recently at the Federal Mobile Computing Summit in Washington. The panelists are Patrick McFall, the acting CIO for the Division of Information Technology of the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service at the Agriculture Department. Shana Simmons, a GeoInt Integration Capabilities Officer for the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. And Rob Palmer, the acting Deputy Executive Director for the Enterprise Systems Development Office at the Homeland Security Department. In this section of the show, we start off with an audience question about possible new guidelines for mobility.
Rob, I'm Eric Mills, Peace Corps. Are you seeing anything in the future as far as regulation, OMB guidelines, NIST, surrounding the mobile computing environment? Considering all the OPM things that are going on also.
Right. I don't know how you could answer that question, no. I mean, I do believe that absolutely there's going to be some additional regulation in the mobile space. I think that in some ways it could be helpful to kind of guide the way that we're going. I hope that there's a balance, but I think the answer to your question is absolutely.
But you're not going to break any news for us, Rob? Tell us about
negative.
The guidance that's coming that you've seen.
That's a rookie move.
All right, we've got about 10 minutes left. Some burning questions. I think the NGA store itself, I mean, I think that is – do you get a sense that other people are asking questions? I mean, well, not a sense. Are other people asking questions about how you put this broker together? Because a lot of agencies say, oh, we're going to do a store. Yeah, Rob's asking a question.
Yeah, that's why I'm already teeing it up.
So go ahead.
I got at least a dozen questions about this thing, but we'll do that. Because that's what we're looking at. Those types of things, that's a gap of ours in DHS, is how we deliver these apps. And then the logic behind how you kind of the logic behind the rating and the understanding of how you deliver those apps and the incentive for the developers. I mean, that's, in my mind, that's extremely innovative and something that, frankly, if we can look into it, absolutely would love to explore further.
We have several organizations that have reached out to us that are have a very keen eye on how we're delivering the hurdles that we're going through, Everyone's looking to see how successful this program is and how they can instrument it within their own organization.
Pat.
Yeah, when we did our introductions a week ago, that was one of the things I asked as well. We're at the Department of Agriculture, we have the same problem. How are we going to deploy the app out there? What store do we use? What store is security going to approve us to use? And go from there. So I definitely am interested in some conversation we get done as well.
And I have another question, but real quick, Shannon, I know that you are focused on geospatial apps or geo-in apps, but are you sharing those apps, or do other people in the intelligence community have access, or does everyone have access?
Yes. So we service the intelligence community and the Department of Defense. We use the PKI, CAC, PIV cards, and GeoAccess as our authentication method to get into the store for your mobile applications. So, yes, we're servicing people from FEMA as well. One of our mission areas is disaster response, humanitarian assistance. So it's near and dear to my heart. You probably hear my accent. Hurricane Katrina and how FEMA and first responders were out there working that disaster, we were on the front lines of that too. And we want the GeoIn App Store to have the apps needed for situations like that. So we're not just military focused. We also have that civil side as well. So we're looking for all federal customers.
Excellent. One more question. Yeah.
Dave Crabtree, Miter. This is for, Mr. McFaul. One of my questions is, are you already working as a CIO? Or are you already working with other agencies such as CDC so that as you migrate to a more of a mobile platform for your field people, that as they collect data, there's an architecture that, one, that can support all that data, but two, so that data is also automatically correlated with whether it's Homeland Security for an outbreak, for disease control. So now in say the city of Chicago, we've got 35,000 cattle that are now infected with something, and which also correlates with a shipment that just came in through Homeland Security at Chicago International Airport. Mm-hmm. So that there's, in other words, is there a tie-in? Is there an open architecture that feeds this system, or is it just going to be a bunch of stovepipes from different agencies that have all this great data, but there is no algorithm that is looking at the data as a whole?
Well, to start off, when you said Mr. McFaul, I looked behind. I was looking for my dad. I wanted to make sure he wasn't here as well. That's a great question. And yes, we are starting to partner up. We are starting to share. Custom Border Protection is with us at the border ports itself. We do a lot of work with them. We are passing data back and forth. In some ways, it is still stovepipe, but we're starting to move ourselves out of that stovepipe arena so that we can share this data around. Because, you know, like I said, diseases themselves, and especially as you look at the One Health aspect of veterinary services and of APHIS, when you say One Health, you're looking at how that animal disease itself may or can transmit itself into the human environment too. So there are a lot of steps that are being taken right now to move us more into that arena, but there are still some stovepipes that we're trying to break down.
Rob, is that something that Tiger Team is looking at all in terms of that stovepipe, the sharing of data, especially as more sensors, the dreaded word of Internet of Things that we all right. seem to go back to?
Yeah, not specifically right now. I would honestly look at the latest Innovation Committee, another federal CIO Council body, the Innovation Committee, and the work that they've done around data, around that. I think it's an absolute great point, and if we can get there in specific use cases we deal with that, I guess on the DHS side, we do get requests often from specific, say the CBP folks, I need an app that does this with this specific database, and so we see right now a lot of pockets of innovation trying to move at different paces. If we could get to the point where, like what you were saying earlier, where all this data is available and let the developers just go at it and write this stuff. And it's that, I think, is where the real value is going to be, where we're really going to see some growth in that space, is when we do a little better job at organizing our data and making it available.
Amen.
All right. I see the other panel's just about getting ready to stand up and get going. Last question, anyone? One last. There you go. You get the getaway question. Make it good. All the pressure's on you.
Great. Our question was, how do you reduce the RFP process to 90 days without compromising efficiency and quality?
That's gracious.
So
that's a good one.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
Right here at the end.
Right. Oh, that's all the time we have.
All right,
we'll talk about this offline. Go ahead.
So we're leveraging people that are in the community today that have already been building applications as well. So we're not just looking for people, grad students doing dissertation work that have never used geospatial data before. We're leveraging existing folks out there that have had a hard time, particularly small business, I'll use an example, that have been building applications, that have been competing in these RFP processes, and maybe just didn't have the overhead or didn't have the knowledge of that process to be able to break into that market. So some of the applications that we're actually working through our process today are commercial applications. They're applications that companies have already built. They're servicing in other areas, and we want to host them within our store as an addition to that market space. And that brings up a good point. We're not buying these applications. We're buying a license for perpetual use. So if developers develop an app for us, we are not prohibiting them from hosting it in Apple Store or Google Play, whatever other platforms. And we are encouraging not just NGA data used within this development for it to be open data. If you have a database that you like using or another set of data that you think is better or helps complement an existing NGA data set, we're pushing that. And within the 90 days, I would answer that with things that have already been developed. I would say utilizing those public forums like GitHub for code that's already existing out there. There's so many different communities that are collaborating and building apps within days. It's not PowerPoint starting from ground one, and it's going to take us 3 years to get a great application. Some of these things can be very lightweight and answer questions for people who are in the field more quickly.
That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to a panel I moderated recently at the Federal Mobile Computing Summit in Washington. The panelists were Patrick McFall, the acting CIO for the Division of Information Technology of the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service at the Agriculture Department, Shana Simmons, a GEOINT Integration Capabilities Officer for the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, and Rob Palmer, the acting Deputy Executive Director for the Enterprise Systems Development Office at the Homeland Security Department. I'm Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.